Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society, the show where we talk about food, food media, restaurants, and so much more. Today, we have Bonnie and Fred, who are childhood friends and co-founders of The Black Forks, a site created to highlight voices of color in the food world from a millennial perspective. Bonnie and Fred, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you both here. I love your site. It's so cool.
Thank you.
So for anyone listening who hasn't seen the site before, how would you describe it?
Oh, that is a good question. I want to say something unlike most sites out there, especially for people of color. I think what Fred and I really try to do is not only be informative, but be entertaining and be real and be honest and kind of have those food conversations that you talk about with your friends in private, but you won't necessarily write about.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly our goal, is to just create a website where you feel like you can see yourself reflected in us or our writers or just the content in general, mm-hmm. where you can feel safe and comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And Fred, how would you describe it?
Vonnie's 1,000% right. It's all the things that we've noticed as, you know, people of color when you go out.
Mm-hmm.
All the things you notice when you're engaging in food culture, whatever is like trending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the things that you kind of are curious about but afraid to kind of put out in that greater public space,
mm-hmm.
We try to kind of tap into.
Yeah, so you have really interesting articles from like a really interesting perspective. And one of my favorites is the one about eating with your hands and how that's okay. And that's actually what you should be doing when you go to a lot of different kinds of restaurants. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like some of your favorite articles that you've seen on your site?
Well, I can't take credit for that. Fred wrote about eating with your hands, but actually that's one of my favorites because, Fred, you come from a background where you don't eat with your hands, but I come from a background where I ate with my hands from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So reading his perspective was really interesting because I know people thought that it was weird that I ate with my hands, but I think reading his narrative was really interesting to see how someone who culturally they didn't grow up that way, how they kind of perceive that custom. But mm-hmm. I'll let first talk more about that.
So, you know, from my perspective, I grew up, like, you know, using utensils.
Mm-hmm.
And eating with your hands was frowned upon. It was something that, you know, you often got disciplined for kind of playing with your food or mm-hmm. kind of, like, prolonging the process of getting on with it.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, and I've often always had friends who are from Africa and West Africa and East Africa and in different countries that were eating with your hand was kind of customary and mm-hmm. almost kind of like a form of community. And even in the moments when I've been in their presence of, you know, a dinner party at their house or a restaurant that caters to that type of food, I've kind of like always shied away or been really awkward and asked for like utensils anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But on my trip to Nigeria, being in like the humble presence of my friend's currently late grandmother, you know, asking for utensils or, you know, asking for provisions to make me comfortable seemed out of the question. And almost
right.
in context, disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I just had to kind of like suck it up and say, hey, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it. And it sounds like a stupid fear, you know, in retrospect. But again, I've always avoided at every Ethiopian restaurant I've ever dined in. So to me, you know, it was kind of like overcoming an obstacle.
Mm-hmm. So can you take me back to when you both decided to start the site? Like, where did that inspiration come from?
Wow. I think we've been talking about that for a few years now. Well, we were talking about that when we were in college. X many years ago.
Yeah. Vani, tell her where we was at too before, when you tell the story.
Where were we? Was it Joe's Crab Shack or Red Lobster?
No, Joe's Crab Shack.
Yeah, and I still have this document to this day. We wrote what we wanted the Black Forks to be, the kind of articles we wanted to write. And I think it just came from Fred and I's experience. Fred's worked in hospitality since high school. I've never worked in the hospitality business in that capacity that Fred has, but I worked in restaurant PR. So I had a different story with food and culture. And I think Fred and I were just kind of like, well, you know, if you look at all the prominent food blogs, publications, editors, writers, like nobody looks like us. Nobody mm-hmm. is a millennial. Nobody comes from an urban background. Nobody is really a first or second gen immigrant. So it was just kind of like, well, why aren't we telling our own stories? There are plenty of people of color who eat and who dine out. So why can't we add something to the landscape? Why don't we add something to the landscape?
Right.
Yeah, exactly what Vani said. And from my perspective, when I first started working in hospitality in New York City, I kind of felt like I wasn't kind of invited to kind of be part of like the cool foodie culture stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of smart. Like I could pick this stuff up. You know, I can pick up, you know, the conversation about wines and artisanal ingredients and kind of different cooking processes and methods. So the exclusion kind of made me feel like, nah, there's got to be more to this story. And this isn't natural. We're talking about food here. Mm-hmm. That's inclusive of everyone.
Right.
So with kind of like that thought in mind, again, it's always kind of been like back in my mind, like, how can we address this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of, that's really similar to why I started writing about, you know, different issues in restaurants of race and, you know, different topics, because I felt like it wasn't being talked about or addressed. It was just kind of, you know, the culture, like, speaking over people of just, like, you know, it's French and Italian and that's it.
Exactly.
And there's no other food in the world.
Delicious food. And there's tacos.
Right. Oh, yeah. Tacos. There's tacos. Yeah. Oh, and there's sushi. Sushi. But that's it.
Yeah. And I think another point, too, as well, is that we couldn't find anyone who wrote in, like, our voice, in a voice that was relatable, that was informative, that wasn't so super serious and stuffy. And, of course, there's room for that super serious, stuffy writing. Well, not stuffy, but, you know, there's room for different kinds of writing, but we couldn't find room for, like the kind of writing that we wanted to read about and the kind of writing that we can say, okay, like, this sounds like my homegirl, you know? Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about some early memories you have of dining growing up? Who wants to go first? Maybe Fred?
I don't know. We both were broke. I don't know.
That's why I looked at you. I'm like...
Mom and dad had, you know, two jobs and, you know, factory jobs. We didn't really dine out. I mean, if I have to kind of like draw a memory, it's all fast food for sure. You know, that was kind of like treating, you know, kind of doing something fast food, like Popeyes, KFC, McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I think that was the extent of it. I can't remember, honestly, my formative years, a restaurant experience per se with my mom and dad and like family. You know what? There was one time we went to like a family buffet, and that was pretty fun. You know, yeah, because it was all the food that my parents, like my mom didn't make. You know, my mom and dad, they're Haitian, so the food that, you know, she makes is not like classic mac and cheese and like, you know, string beans and like classic fried chicken. Like she didn't make stuff like that. So having that, you know, I remember that clearly. Just, whoa, like, look at this.
This is different.
This is all the real stuff. this is real food, Mom.
Yeah, I was second at Chinese buffet. We went occasionally. I'm Ghanaian, West African. We have this attitude of, like, why would you dine outside if you have food at home? That's what my parents told me. Like, why are you going outside?
We got food at home.
Hey, we got food at home. And I'm like, no, this is experience. And they're just like, go sit down somewhere. Like, yeah. We don't have time for this. But, like, the Chinese buffet was one. In high school, like, we used to go out, like, every month sometimes. So, like, a Red Lobster or, like, a Chili's. I mean, but that was, I guess, my dining experience. I didn't really, like, go out to eat until college, actually. Mm-hmm. Because we went to a predominantly white school, and you know, with that comes a lot of things that you learn about that you didn't necessarily get exposed to when you were younger. So, like, I didn't realize that dining out was really that much of a thing until I went to college, to be honest with you. I mean, it sounds kind of sad, but it is what it is. So, as formative dining experience, I don't really have too many. You know, meals we're eating at home with your family and friends, that's how, you know, food was kind of taught in my family, that you eat in a more intimate setting.
So, like, in college, what was that like when you started going out to eat? Like, where were you going? Like, was it cheap places or expensive places or in between? Or?
I might have started a little bit, like, late in my high school years. Because, you know, once you get that first kind of job, you know, you got a little cash and, you know, you go out on dates, take the ladies out, take them somewhere nice, Fridays or something like that. Come on, you know, 16, 17, that was the world.
Yeah, right. I'm telling you, was gourmet. Those biscuits?
Jack Daniel's sauce. Yo, it's on me.
We went to Friday's Applebee's. That was the world. 16, 17. You paying for all this? Yes, I'm paying for all this.
Got the baby back ribs too?
Pay for all this. Had a little debit card and everything. Like,
oh,
yeah,
wow.
There
you were fancy. Not even cash.
I got a sign. Like, there was, yeah, it was. So, yeah, it was. You know what? I think my first kind of like feeling was like that feeling of celebration. That's what I connected to first. Like, yo, this is like a, people feel good. It's a good feeling. You know, you get service. Yeah, the food's cool. But the feeling of celebration, I think, is what I kind of got probably hooked on, you know, like the idea with. Yeah, I think that idea for me kind of like made it like real, you know, and then it became like all my money's going out.
Right.
You're going to eat.
And what about you, Vani?
Oh, can you repeat the question one more time?
Yeah. So what was going out to eat in college like? Like, where were you going?
So my friends were really big fans of P.F. Chang's, which to a broke college student is expensive. When you're on that work study money, you have to pay your cell phone bills. You're like, P.F. Chang's or Chinese? Like, which one am I going to do? But yeah, it was like the Applebee's, the Red Lobsters. I think we had a Joe's Crab Shack, actually, like not too far away from our school. I think it was different for me because I didn't dine out as much because, you know, my family's working class. I just didn't have that kind of disposable income, and I was working pretty much all throughout college to pay for my tuition. So I didn't really necessarily have that experience of like, oh, I'm just going to go out to Applebee's every Friday night. But the times that I did go, like first day, it was a celebration of like, I'm done with this big test. I'm done with this final. I just want to celebrate with my friends and like have a watered down drink from Applebee's and call it a day, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, those times were really, really fun. I mean, Freddie, you're laughing, but you know, those drinks were watered down.
No, no. I was just thinking of a video that I was watching the other video showing how to make the dollar margarita.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
And when you said that, I was like, ah.
It's this big bucket and they pour in like sour mix and like, I think like maybe one bottle of tequila and then just like sugar water.
I believe that because that's how exactly it tasted, like sugar water with a little bit of tequila.
A splash.
Yeah, just a dash.
So you both have traveled quite a bit. Can you talk about the role that food has played in your travels?
Ooh, I'm actually going to New Orleans next week and I'm asking everyone for restaurant recommendations. I feel like food is such a big thing. Even when I traveled to Curacao last year, like one of the first things I did after like looking up the beaches was like the food and the history of the food and where they get authentic food, because I feel like the best way to experience a culture is through their food and asking people about what they eat and why they eat it and how it came to be. And I love to eat maybe a little bit too much, so I'm always looking up recommendations for food anywhere I travel.
I think for me, like traveling made me, it kind of like, it brought food culture down a notch to the idea that it's just really about like supporting one another, right? Supporting family through nourishment. It's a need and everyone understands it's a need. It's not like this super like sacred thing. It's just this very like, approachable, very like honest way of kind of like connected. So, you know, whether it's Nigeria for instance most recently, but I can think back to South Africa or wherever, you know, anywhere in Latin America, it's always been kind of like this, everyone's getting together, the food's ready, it's been like this super labor intensive process that was done. There's no shortcuts. There's no bags and add water and wait 2 minutes, you know, for it to be done. It's super labor intensive, super honest. And then, you know, it's an expression of love. And it's what it really is. They don't say it and like you don't feel it or you don't see it. It's really prominent in this display. It's really prominent in the way that it's like served. So food is love everywhere else except
in America.
No. Well, I think sometimes, you know, you gotta dig through. You know, it gets a little confusing to, you know, what's the focus.
So maybe we make food more than what it is. We try to make it into a bunch of different stuff, and it's just a meal.
I mean, my thing is like, food is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, if in any way, where you know we're talking about food culture, or we're kind of like creating, or kind of manufacturing some type of experience that purposely on its outset is going to exclude 95% of people, then I can't really think of it as like food. I think it's like a prop. I don't really understand how that in a sense connects back to what it means globally around the world, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It's just, to me, it's lost. It's a little devoid sometimes, and that's I think that's a fair critique. I think most food
definitely
experts like we are, you know, would probably agree, you know.
You know, I've heard a lot of chefs say, you know, at the end of the day, it's just dinner. You know, you're just sitting down and you're having some food. I think in recent years, it has become this whole thing around what's ultimately a plate of food.
That's true. Food has become art. Food has become performance. It's become so much more, and I think it's very much an American thing because most places in the world do not have that luxury of looking at food in those particular ways. And I think because we have that luxury here, we're able to nitpick food and kind of take it in so many different directions. But like what Fred said, food is love, and you know, the big thing is that if everyone can enjoy a plate of food, or everyone can enjoy a plate of quality food, then what's the point of even like talking about it and making a big hoopla about it if everyone can't be seated at the table together?
Right. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Anku Society and more with the Black Forks.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food, and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients. Food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature. Food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
All right, so we're back with Bonnie and Fred from the Black Forks. And Fred, I heard you have a nickname. Make sure I get this right. Fred?
Oh, I thought he was going to say Uncle Fred.
No. Fried Chicken Fred. Wait, what's Uncle Fred?
Well,
both of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of my friends at a very young age were calling me Uncle Fred. I was 18 and they were like, Uncle Fred. I'm like, I'm not your uncle. I'm 18 years old. But yeah, Fried Chicken Fred. I mean, part of that, it's, you know, it's part joke but part seriousness. Is like, well, you don't know how I got it or how...
Yeah, how did you get it?
Oh, well, the earliest time I remember someone calling me Fried Chicken Fred, I think I told you the story, right? No?
Did you? I don't know. Tell it again. Oh. Tell it for the audience.
All right, so I was in college, and we went to, like, this conference, right? Like, this pre-professional conference in Atlanta. And so, you know, you're staying in a hotel, you're in college because y'all having all this fun and kind of hanging out. And then we're taking, you know, we're walking around the town. And then it was late, and I was hungry. And It was late and I was hungry, and everywhere was kind of closed. And the only places that were open, if you know Atlanta really well, is you know, strip clubs. But strip clubs in Atlanta have really great food, and they do takeout, they do dine-in, they do whatever. So, I'm at this So I'm at this pre-professional conference, and the students that came there, like, these very, like, you know, they like scientific, like, kids, or they all want to be like scientists, doctors, pharmacists, and stuff like that. It was kind of one of those conferences that we went to. And so they walk in, we're like, Fred, we don't want to go in. I'm like, look, I'm so hungry. So they're like, this is ridiculous. We're not going in there for food. I'm like, look, they do takeout. Just let me order the food, and then we'll leave. So I go inside. It's a strip club. Order some fried chicken and come out. And then, you know, we're walking back to the hotel, and I'm eating the chicken. And the whole time, they're just laughing like, I can't believe we went inside a strip club
for fried
at 1
chicken.
In the morning for fried chicken. Fried chicken Fred. So they were, and then we came back to campus, and they just kept on calling me that. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. And then I've connected with it, and I've kind of evolved the meaning of it. Like, hey, we don't have to be apologetic about things that we like, right?
So no, fried chicken, not right? at all.
We enjoy it.
Fried chicken's delicious.
So hell yeah, fried chicken Fred, I'll take it all day. You know, it's not embarrassing. Again, it's like something you could take things that people can make fun of you about, mm-hmm. culturally and like personally, and just kind of mm-hmm. run with it and have fun with it. So,
but you still look for the best fried chicken in places.
Oh yeah, it's serious. I mean, me and Vonnie's probably been on a few epic fried chicken,
like crawls.
I guess.
Well, Fred goes to places that I personally won't go to for safety reasons, because he likes to go at times of the night where I'm sleeping. But I trust Fred in all his fried chicken recommendations. He has never.
I'm sure that's the best fried chicken, though.
I know it's good. I'm just not going with him.
If you feel a little unsafe, it's probably good.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some patterns to like where you can find some good fried chicken. That, you know.
Are you gonna share any names? Are you gonna keep them to yourself? Where are some good spots?
I think, first off, Harlem makes fried chicken everywhere in Harlem.
Just the whole area.
I mean, honestly, they probably have per capita probably the best fried chicken in, like, the East Coast. So New York City, I can't say because D.C. is up there, and you know. But Harlem, for sure. I found that the fried chicken in Brooklyn wasn't all that exciting. Some places it was hit or miss, you know. But Harlem, I mean, you could go into Chicken Shack. You could go into, you know, a highly rated chef restaurant, and you know, you can still get a decent fried chicken. So
from fried chicken spots to dining culture as a whole, what do you make of today's dining culture? Like, is there anything you change, or do you like some of the stuff that you've seen?
I'll let you take this question for it.
Dining culture, dad, where would I start? I got a list. Let me pull up the list. All the things that I would change, Korsha?
No, it's stuff that you like, things that you change.
Oh, I'm playing. I've got a list.
You don't even have a list.
No, I don't have a list.
Yeah, he was looking at his clock.
What I like about dining culture is probably not even like in the front of the house. It's probably like seldom seen. It's mm-hmm. the first thing that I thought was awesome was family meal.
Mm-hmm.
Family meal, like, you know, before, and we talked about this, like family meal before restaurant service, dinner service, yeah. whatever. Like, everyone's sitting and eating, you know, from all the line cooks to mm-hmm. dishwasher to the busboy and or girl, food runners, servers, mm-hmm. and everyone's having, and even managers on duty. Everyone's got to get in there. There's no order to it. There's no hierarchy. The manager's mm-hmm. late. The GM's late. The GM ain't getting, you know, he's right. not getting food. So everyone's right. got to, like, be there at the same time. We get to kind of, like, do some quick chat. Mm-hmm. Just kind of, like, check each other's, you know, temperature, vibe out mm-hmm. before we kind of go and serve, right?
Right.
And I think that felt really natural, right? We mm-hmm. connect first, we come together first, and then we go out and we share.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. Mm-hmm. That was my first thing I noticed, and I was like, this is awesome.
As a diner, are there certain things that you see in the, like, food scene now that you like? Are any, like, trends or...
I am seeing, just in general, like with you and what Nicole's doing, just more people of color. I don't know, maybe it's because my eyes are just like looking for those people, but just seeing like more diverse voices of people of color. Like, you have people who are critics for Bloomberg and New York Times and writers, and it's just nice to just see that food is just not so white anymore, that there's mm-hmm. just different voices adding to the landscape. We're talking about social justice and food justice a lot more, which I felt like when we first started the Black Forks, I didn't really hear too much about. So just hearing more about food outside of the restaurant culture mm-hmm. has been really, really refreshing. And I do like that a lot about how the dining scene is evolving today.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely agree. I think more women opening restaurants, more women are chefs. I think that's kind of cool. And again, natural. Again, I'm so, you know, it's so things, you know, in a sense, because they've always been the providers, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it all kind of changed somehow, some way over time.
Mm-hmm.
It probably had something to do when it, you know, became profitable, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or
you mean like the switch from, or in like professional kitchens, men being the head of it instead of women who did the cooking at home.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's probably had to do something when, you know, the pay went up significantly, maybe, or, you know, the stardom of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's pretty cool. I like that trend. Or if that's a trend, I don't know if that's even appropriate to call that a trend, but
yeah, I think there's more women in charge of food businesses now, which is always a good thing, in my opinion. Can you both talk about a really bad restaurant experience that you've had? And you don't have to name the name of the restaurant. You can if you want to, but you do not have to.
I remember...
Vadi got plenty. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was like, which one? I went to this place that's famous for like Belgian waffles. I'll just leave it at that. And I went with a friend. I was really excited because I love waffles. And I was like, oh, waffles. And I went there and the service was horrible. The lady paid us no mind. Mm. All of our food came out lukewarm to cold. I ordered hot chocolate. Came out cold chocolate. I told her about it. She caught an attitude with me. When I tried to get her attention, she was too busy talking to, I guess, her regular patrons. It was just a horrible experience. And my friend and I did not tip. And I was like, I hate to be a stereotypical black person right now, but I'm like, you don't deserve any of my money outside of what I paid you. And I was so angry because, you know, we were really polite. Like, we gave her no reason for her to be rude. But I don't know. Maybe she was having a bad day. I don't know. But it was definitely, like, top three worst dining experiences. Like, not only was the food bad, but she just had like a stink attitude.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Finally, almost brought up tipping. I was like, "Oh, black people don't tip."
Don't say that.
Question: don't lie to your listeners.
That's not true. That's not true. All the black people I know tip really well.
If you get good service, but no, my food was cold, and she had attitude.
No, this Hungry Society does not support the idea
that black people don't tip.
Yes, but guys, we tip. We tip very well. Except for if you have an attitude and my food comes out cold. That's it.
Except for.
Let's just say it's all about nuance. But I think for me, the worst experience I've had in New York City kind of food culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think I told you about this too. This one was a place that's famous for its ramen. And okay. Let me first give a disclaimer. I'm like a fake foodie in a way.
I said you're a real foodie.
I am a real foodie, but I'm like a fake foodie. And foodie, whatever that word means, but I'm a fake food enthusiast in a way. I just joke about that because I don't eat pork, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of like the super kind of like high-end food culture stuff deals with pork, rendered pork fat, mm-hmm. and
pork bellies.
And
you know,
bacon. And yeah,
bacon. Gotta be bacon.
So. Extra bacon.
I'm the one like, you got anything halal in here? Because... You got anything halal here for the brother? Because the brother don't eat no pork. Excuse me, sir? I don't eat no swine. Anyway, so it was this place that's known for ramen. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm part of the thing about creating Black Forks, me and Vani, we wanted to kind of grow in the food culture as well and explore it collectively mm-hmm. with our audience and kind of, push each other to try new things. So I'm trying this ramen spot. It's famous. Everyone goes for it for ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have one ramen description that they talk about. It's like, they say it's chicken, you know, whatever. Again, fried chicken. I'm all chicken, cool. Spicy. They talk about all these other aromatics and different things mm-hmm. that are, you know, you're going to experience in a ramen. And never say anything about no pork. I mean, never said anything about containing pork.
Mm.
So I ordered it. I was with my girlfriend at the time. She ordered her ramen, some other ramen. That, we ordered drinks, we had appetizers, and the ramen come out, and then I'm just like, something's weird about this, you know? From the smell of it, mm-hmm. it just felt a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I know I double-checked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This place is, like, very, like, I'm probably going to give too much away, but minimalist in its style,
mm-hmm.
and you know, again, I'm already feeling a little anxious because I'm the only black person there. So mm-hmm. I asked the waitress. She's been pleasant the whole way through. And I said, hey, I'm sorry, I don't eat pork. Does this have pork in it? She's like, yes, it's ramen. And I was like, I'm sorry, but I read the menu. It didn't say anything about pork in it. She's like, I'm sorry, all ramen have pork in it. She's like, I know. And actually, she wasn't even my girlfriend. We were dating then, so I just felt a little embarrassed. I was like, she's like, I could take it away. I could take it away, and we could switch it out. I'm like, no, you could leave it. She then went on to say that they have a veggie kind of like cold noodle ramen option. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll take that. She's like, you sure? I could take this off. I'm like, no, I don't need that off the menu. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is that I don't eat pork. So she kind of left. She could sense that I wasn't like feeling good about that exchange. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she put in my order and it came out. But I'm just like, she made me just feel like nothing, like, you know, yeah. tiny, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm on a date. So I'm like, no, I'll pay for three ramens. We bagged the other one up.
Yeah.
My girlfriend just took it to her roommate at mm-hmm. the time. And, you know, I ate the colder veggie noodle, mm-hmm. whatever option. But again, it's just like just the assumption that is made that, mm-hmm. that, you know, like you and your friends know. Again, it becomes like this private clicky group
yeah.
of people exchanging experiences, talking to each other, and kind of cultivating experience, mm-hmm. but excluding like everyone,
yeah.
like not necessarily taking in context with other people's backgrounds and, you know, diet needs. Like, it's pork.
Right. So you touched on something interesting about being the only person of color, well, not person of color, but only black person in the dining room. I think we've all experienced that at some point. I think it really does impact the dining experience that you have if you have someone taking care of you that isn't helpful in that way, that doesn't, you know, let you know, oh yeah, there's pork in that. They assume mm-hmm. instead of guide you through this process. Have you guys ever experienced anything like that, like being the only black people in a dining room?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. Sometimes you'd be the only person of color, period. And I don't know, you kind of feel it, and it's not saying, I mean, you don't go looking for that feeling, but you kind of feel like all eyes on you in this very like weird way. And I find that a lot of times when I'm the only person of color in a restaurant, either people are paying too much attention or it's not enough attention. Like, my water's been empty for 5 minutes now and I'm thirsty and no one has come to like refill my water. Lack of attention. I think it's gotten a little bit better now, mm-hmm. maybe because foodies of color, for lack of a better term, are more visible. But I think there's still been plenty of times I've gone to a restaurant and I'm just like, this feels odd. Mm-hmm. But I'm still there anyway.
Right. One of the worst times with that was not that someone made an assumption that I knew, but they made an assumption that I didn't know something.
Mm.
I asked for a Negroni, and the bartender, I'm the only person of color in the bar, and he's about to hand it to me, and he goes, wait a minute, have you had one of these before?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I was like, I ordered that. I ordered the Negroni. It's my favorite drink.
Oh, wow.
He
just wanted you to order Hennessy on the rocks.
Korsha. Or Amaretto Sour.
No. You got to support me on this one, Korsha. Amaretto Sour. Amaretto Sour. And Baca Hennessy on the rocks.
I haven't had one of those since, like, 07.
Hennessy on the rocks.
Wait, you were drinking Amaretto Sour when you were 7?
No, 2007. Oh my God, no.
It's that La Vida.
No. I was like, why you started early?
My family's West Indian, but we're like, not that West Indian. Not drinking it 7.
It's rum punch.
Yeah, there's more rum. So my last question, if you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who's invited?
Is that alive?
Anybody.
Volume.
Also, it could be celebrities, people you don't know.
Last meal. Oh.
Let's see.
I guess I don't even want to get like in the. I guess Obama. President Obama and... Is it three or two?
You can have as many people as you want at this last meal. And whatever you want to eat, whatever you want to drink.
If I'm going to have my last meal, I think I want Ghanaian food. Like, I want to go home eating home food. I love Accra restaurant in the Bronx. It's like my favorite Ghanaian restaurant ever. But if I'm going to have my last meal, like, I want it to be fun. I don't want it to be so serious. Can I say I want to have Cardi B at my last dinner?
Yes. Yes.
Because she seems really fun. Like, if I'm going to die, like, I want to die laughing. I'll do Obama. I'll do my grandfather, my late grandfather. Who else will I do? I don't want to do Oprah. She's too inspirational for me. Like, if I'm dying, I just want to die happy.
Yeah, she's going to give you the advice you could have used, you know, during your life.
Yeah. I'm just kind of like, nah, Oprah's
you're about to die. You might as well.
Yeah.
I don't need inspiration right now.
Exactly. Honestly, like, my family and friends, like, the people that have always been with me up until my last day, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's all I need. My family, friends, Obama, and Cardi B.
What dishes in particular would you have?
Ooh. All right, if I'm going out, I have like 5 stomachs, so I'm going to eat everything. off rip, there's a dish called wache. It's like Ghanaian rice and beans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really beautiful, like, scarlet color because you put sorghum or millet leaves in it. And you let it stew with the rice and beans, and it's delicious. It's unlike any other rice and beans you've had. I will have that, like, whole meal. I will have okra stew with, like, fish and goat meat. I will have jollof rice because I cannot go out off this earth without having jollof rice. I'll just have, like, a big-ass Ghanaian buffet and just, like, eat and then, like, have a stomachache and just, like, fall over and die. And I'll be okay. Like, I would live the good life.
You're the first person to say you die, like, in the restaurant. You just keel over.
I'll just keel over. Just, like, you my time is done. Yes, die. I've met my Lord. I'm good.
And Fred, what about you?
It'd probably be like, food-wise, it'd probably be like some buffet. I'd probably definitely have some chicken. I love chicken. And
fried chicken or grilled chicken?
When I say it seriously, it's like, it's alarming, right? He's like sitting with a straight face. I like Greek food, so I'd probably have like some, like, spinacopia. Like something like a moussaka or some type of mixed grill that the Greeks love to do. Jollof rice I love as well. So I'd probably have a scoop of that. And some banana bread and some banana ice cream would probably be the dish that
So I'd... you'd have like food from a bunch of different places.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the thing about culture and it kind of like permeating through other... like through like one person to another or one group to another is that you get to like enjoy what they grew up loving as well. It's like it's crazy, you know?
And where would it be though? Like setting wise, where would you want to have that meal?
That type of experience, I gotta have it in the hood somewhere. I gotta go to the hood. I gotta be like, you know, whether it's in Jersey and Broad and Market in Newark or in Harlem, 125th Street, or dare I say the Bronx.
Bronx.
But any hood I got, because for me, like, urban communities, really urban communities, I feel the most comfortable, I feel the most relaxed, I feel the most myself, I'm able to kind of just be carefree, you know?
And who's invited?
Invitation. I mean, Vonnie just had a stellar list. I was going to go serious. I was going to say Barack Obama. I was going to sit Barack Obama and Cornel West down.
I don't want to get too intellectual, though, on my last day. I just kind of want to die in peace.
But nobody's
it's
eating.
Up to you.
Die in peace.
You're right. Nobody would be eating if all those people are talking, right? Well, who's eating? Yeah, I don't know. It'd probably be, like, some mix of intellectual /, like, super dope. Like, you know. Like, I like Selena. I would have Selena.
You have Selena there?
Yeah, I think she kind of did.
Wow.
Yeah, I know that's random, right?
That's a great one.
Yeah, that's actually really good.
Yeah, just people like I would want to, like, you know, because they were like big balls of just like, you know,
just like people with energy.
Yeah, and just the best stuff on earth, like Snapple says.
I thought you were saying you'd have Snapple at your last
No, drinking. I'm drinking Hennessy and ginger like some ginger, very ginger punch tea thing.
Nice.
That would be it, you know, sounds, in the hood.
Yeah, sounds lit. That's it.
So. Ashes to ashes. Dust to dust. Send me back.
You can freestyle your way out.
Send me back to the community.
I'll have like trap music in mind. I don't want to freestyle because I'm too busy eating.
You should have Cardi perform. I mean, she's there.
Oh, that would be good.
She might as well jump on the
stage.
Do a
little sign for me because, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
you're
true. About to die.
You yeah, I'm about to die. That's the least you can do. The least.
Well, how about you? Did you ever?
Oh, I've never answered this question.
Are we supposed to ask you? I could take that off. Take that. You can edit that out.
Well, I have my friends and family. I probably have it somewhere looking at some water. And then seafood. Some like fried fish, some fried shrimp, clams, lobster, crabs, beer, wine. Cocktails, a lot of stuff.
Whiting.
Yeah, fried whiting.
And tilapia.
Gotta have that.
Negronis.
No, Negronis, yes. I know what those are. So I'll have some Negronis. Well, Vanya and Fred, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kush. I'm so proud of you. Congratulations.
Yes, thank congrats. You. And thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week on The Hungry Society.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.